On this episode of Still Loading, you bring the game and Carmine will bring the sound. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of the Still Loading Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Koval, and today on the show, I have a wonderful interview prepared for you. Today, I am joined by the wonderful Carmine from Game and Sound, the YouTube channel Game and Sound, and this interview has been a long time coming. We have been planning this for over 8 months, just about, or maybe 7 months at the very least, and it's just been nonstop chaos on both our ends, but we finally worked out a schedule. We're here, and joining me today to talk about all things games and all things sounds is Carmine. Carmine, how are you doing today?
Hey, everyone. Thanks for having me. This is actually my first podcast.
Is it?
Ever, yes. I've done interviews and stuff like that, but the first podcast ever. So, yeah.
I wanted to have you on because I've actually enjoyed your music on the Game and Sound YouTube channel for a while. In fact, I reached out to you to ask for permission to use your music on the Secret of Monkey Island, your cover of Secret of Monkey Island. And
I forgot that.
I mean, I think it was a year prior to when I asked you to come on the show. But I saw on Twitter that you said, you tweeted out something like, I got an email from a podcast and it was like something not related to coming onto a podcast.
Yeah. It was like I don't know if it was a scam or something like that, but yeah, it was like a bot or something.
And you mentioned how you would love to come on a podcast and no one has asked you. I'm like, I can fix that. So here we are.
Yeah,
finally.
You surely did.
I mean, it took me 7 months, but we finally got it. So yeah, man, thank you so much for joining me. First off, how are you doing today?
I'm pretty all right, chilling out. I got my coffee here. I worked on some music. It's been a chill kind of day. It's pretty cold outside, so you know, it's one of those nice days where you're all cozy inside working on your music, and you know, took it to a friend today, so it's very good.
What you said, it's cold. What temperatures are you? Feel free to do it in Celsius. I have a calculator for us dumb Americans to to switch it over.
It's been, I think, 5 degrees Celsius.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So that's in the low 40s for us. By the way, listeners, I'm not that good at math. I brought it up on Google. I just did
that
real
but quick. If you didn't say that, you know, no one would be able to tell it. So.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I'm so smart, listeners. Look at me doing math. You can't
doing
tell
the Fahrenheit and Celsius.
Oh my goodness. Well, thank you. Like I said, can't thank you enough for coming on the show. My first question for you to kind of start off our conversation here is, you know, that we are a gaming podcast, and while I do want to talk about your YouTube channel, your influence for the YouTube channel clearly is video games. It's called Game and Sound. It's got an awesome version of the Game and Watch logo. I really like that.
Yep.
So my first question for you, what are some of your earliest gaming memories and how did you kind of get into video games in general?
Oh man, it's a big question. So I want to say my very, very first game was the first Sonic the Hedgehog.
On the Mega Drive, okay.
Yes, because my dad actually had a Mega Drive or Genesis for American people, and he just bought it for himself. But you know, it happened to be in the house and was my first actual game, and it was a bunch of Mega Drive games. Some were more weird, and some others were, you know, are more nerd today, like Mickey Mouse Castlevolution, yes. And then the next console was the SNES, and you know, Mario World and all of that. That got me into Nintendo. And this is actually a very curious thing. So I had this game that's called Pluck for the SNES, which isn't very known of.
Like P-L-O-K?
Yes.
Okay.
And it isn't that much to write home about in terms of, you know, platformer, but it was a fine game. It wasn't anything crazy. It had a nice style, but the big thing about this game was the music. I really liked the music. And then years and years later, I found out that, you know, when I actually started the channel and I started, you know, getting interested into composers, game composers and stuff like that, I found out that the soundtrack was made by Tim and Jeff Follin, I think, two brothers.
Tim and Jeff Follin, yep.
Yes, they are very, very well known among, you know, fans of game music. And the soundtrack is basically like a prog rock album, like a 70s prog rock album. And it's super weird because growing up and, you know, learning guitar when I was like, I don't know, 15 or something, I got into prog rock, like, for some reason. And then I found out that when I was just a little Carmine Jr., I already liked prog rock in a way because I liked the music from Pluck.
Oh, so maybe it kind of informed your opinion.
It might have, I don't know. But, you know, it's a weird coincidence, but, you know, there has to be something like that. By the way, it's like a fire soundtrack. You should go listen to it.
I think I saw something literally on Twitter. Maybe you retweeted it on your account. Someone was saying how great the Pluck soundtrack was. I'm like, I've never even listened to it. What I know Tim and Jeff Follin from the most is their Silver Surfer soundtrack on the original Nintendo, which is just balls to the wall insane. Like, the stuff they're able to pull off on that limited sound chip in that game is insane.
It's crazy. It's like, even on the SNES, if you listen to Pluck, or I don't know if they did anything else on the SNES specifically, but the way it works in a very, you know, broad manner, I'm no expert, but I know SNES works on like with samples instead of a synthesis engine like the Genesis, like the Mega Drive, and the way they like made this soundtrack sound that rich is they actually layered samples one on top of each other. And then since the SNES has, like, I don't know, it has limited tracks for samples, like maybe eight, I don't know.
I'm not sure either.
Like, the way they did it is, like, we want to have these three sounds here, but we don't have space left. So what we're going to do, we're going to like mix them together in one single sample and then, you know, put it in one track.
Like, I see.
It's very fun and curious because it's the way like old 8-tracks worked, like, you know, in the 70s. The way they recorded music. So very old school style. Super, super cool.
That's super interesting. Now, you mentioned a handful of things, Sonic and then like Mario and Super Nintendo. Not even out of those, maybe it's even something you didn't mention. What would you say is some of your most formative ones? Meaning like for myself, as an example, I remember playing, you know, Sonic the Hedgehog at my neighbor's house. And even though I can't say I got to play it a lot, it was super formative for me because it's something that I still hold and I, you know, a really fond memory. And things that kind of formed my opinions on games later on. I would also say, like, first time I played like Final Fantasy and stuff like that, like, really formed the basis of kind of what my gaming tastes are for years to come. Yeah.
My case, I want to say Sonic was a little bit of a one-off because then I never got to play 2 and 3. I played them like very, very late. Like, it's something I did willingly later. But once I got into Nintendo platforms, then, you know, it's always been Nintendo since the SNES. I got the N64, I got the GameCube, I got the Wii, et cetera, etc. But I want to say Mario World is still one of my favorite like platformers like ever.
Yes.
I have trouble thinking of better 2D ones. I want to say Donkey Kong.
Few and far between. The only other one I can think of would be Super Mario World. Well, two. Yoshi's Island.
Yoshi's Island, yes. Even like Donkey Kong Country, I really, really love those games. But I think they're a little bit more jank than Mario World. Mario World is like, it's super tight even today.
Yep.
But yeah, I like Mario 64 was a good one, a big one. And I think it holds up today, even though... You know, worse than Mario World, just because you know camera issues. Yeah. If you think that it was Nintendo's first attempt at 3D, that it's crazy though. Like
the
Mario
fact
64,
that
I think
it controls a lot better than it has any right to, considering they were trying to figure stuff out on the fly. Like there wasn't something to reference back to; they had to make it all in their first time. It's wild.
Yeah. I don't want to say common things, but I mean, cannot.
You're allowed to say common things too. I think like people way too often get hung up. Like I gotta say something super obscure and edgy to, you know, show how credible my gamer card is or something like that. Nah, man. If your favorite Mario is Super Mario World, like there's a reason why Mario is still popular. Like. No ifs, ands, or buts. Like, there's a reason why Mario is still popular. If you want an obscure game, I can tell you Kabuki Quantum Fighter. I talk about it all the goddamn time because no one ever mentions Kabuki Quantum Fighter. That doesn't make me more of a gamer because of it. It just means that I have less of a life because I've heard of Kabuki Quantum Fighter. But
yeah, I think the weirdest game I know is probably Pluck. And I had, but this is like a weird one, and I kind of liked it, but the music again is very it's very good that it's kind of become like a meme with people I know, because I think it's a Looney Tunes game.
Okay.
Let me look it up because I know it in Italian, but I don't know.
Is it Sheep, Dog, and Wolf?
Yes.
Wait, are you serious?
Yes, I love it. Oh my god,
dude!
Oh my god!
In North America, it's called Sheep Raider. It's the one you play as Sam Sheepdog, Ralph Wolf having to steal the sheep from Sam Sheepdog.
Yes.
Dude, you're blowing my god. No one knows about that game at all.
Oh my god.
That was a shot in the dark. I'm like, that's an obscure game that like I love. I actually beat it for the first time last year on Twitch and I loved it. Oh my god,
the music is crazy. Crazy, like it goes from like funk and rock music to
there's like a lot of fusion
drum
stuff,
bass
it.
Fusion, it's you know, it's all over the place in a good way, like and it has no right to be that good. It's like Looney Tunes licensed game, and
my mind is just blown. Like, no, you're the first person I've ever spoken to that legitimately has known about that game. I think it was more popular over in Europe, so maybe that's why. But I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
I think I know it from like a demo disc. Not even I don't have the full game. I just said that demo disc,
I would actually show you my copy if I wasn't like, you can kind of see it on the video screens, which I know listeners can't, like a lot of my shelving is empty because I've been in the process of tearing down my game room for other shenanigans going on. But, I do own a copy. It's just stored somewhere else right now, but that's, I'm
kind of blown away as well, because I'm not sure if you're the first person I'm speaking to that knows it, but if you're not the first, you're like the second, like
No one knows about that game.
And no one knows it.
It's a really underrated puzzle platformer. I really enjoyed that game when I played it. I really wish more people heard about it or played it, but I do actually plan on doing an episode on it at some point. I just don't have the time for it. But okay. So in speaking of formative games and gaming memories and whatnot, which games kind of informed your musical tastes? Like, you referenced already how about Sheepdog and Wolf a little bit with the music and all the different genres that it like incorporated into the game. But are there game, is that one of them? Or do you have like a list of games that like really influenced your taste or are just some of your favorite soundtracks in general?
Okay. So my taste in music, like in general, has a lot of, you know, culprits. It's not just games. I know people who base their listening a lot on just games and game soundtracks. And that, you know, there's no,
that's a little limiting. No offense to game soundtracks.
But, yeah, there's no problem with that. But you know, it, a lot of times, those soundtracks do reference or take inspiration from other things. So I would like to know these other things, right? So it's in terms of games, I would say for the electronic side, I want to say one of the first and one of those that are still there in my head all the time is Metroid Prime. I really like the feel of that soundtrack. It's one of my favorite games like ever, but other than that, it's the soundtrack is very electronic heavy and can be like borderline ravey sometimes. But most of the time is super atmospheric and has I think gorgeous sound design, and you know, it to me, it conveys perfectly what the game is supposed to, you know, make you feel like. So
instead of like a memorable melody, it's more of an atmosphere that it builds.
Yeah. And great sounds. Like I remember like specific kicks, specific snares in the soundtrack. Like,
now, sorry, real quick. I realized we've been going for almost 20 minutes now and we haven't even talked about like why we're focusing so much on music. We never mentioned what game and sound actually is. So listeners, for my listeners, real quick, tell them about your YouTube channel, excuse me, and then we'll continue on with our conversation about musical influences. So yeah, tell my listeners about your channel.
Yeah, so I just make cover music from video games, and the idea was just, you know, it's kind of a stereotypical thing, but, you know, back like almost 10 years ago now, I've been doing this, and I just made an F-Zero cover for fun. Like, I think it was Big Blue. And, you know, friends and, you know, mostly friends like told me like, you should, you know, put it somewhere so like we can listen to it whenever you're not around to send us the files. And, you know, some of those friends just told me like straight up, you should, you know, open a channel. Maybe, you know, people will start liking it and you can, you know, do more covers. And that's basically the reason why I started the channel. And the way I chose the name was just, you know, something that, you know, I thought about it because I wanted it to be not something that I would change like after a year if it went well or, you know, moderately well. So I think Game and Sound is a good name because it's like Game and Sound, like the actual Game and Watch, the actual like, you know, line of video games was, you know, just a series of different games, different things, but, you know, they were under the same moniker. So I think Game and Sound, I thought Game and Sound would be like a good name because I would do a lot of different, you know, covers and things and put it under the same name. So that's the general idea for it. And I mainly play guitar. I actually, you know, I would say I just play guitar. I play piano, but it's not. It's just for composition rather than performing. And my very first covers were just guitar-based. I love guitar-based. Well, now, you know, I'm all over the place because, you know, in the meanwhile, I studied composition and stuff. So I'm very well-versed now with many, many instruments and, you know, sounds.
Yeah.
So that's a good name.
Well-versed with lots of different games and lots of different sounds. So it's fitting. But yeah, let's move on back now. Now that my listeners have an idea of what your channel is, let's continue to talk about your musical influences. So you already mentioned Metroid Prime. You also mentioned prog rock is a musical.
Yes. Influence.
What are some of your favorite prog rock? Prog rock bands.
Oh man. So prog rock, I would say if I had to choose like one genre, one favorite genre, it would be prog rock. I don't like choosing favorites. It's never just one for me.
You can have a favorite, but you can still enjoy others. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always difficult for me to just pinpoint like one thing. But like my favorite bands would be Gentle Giant first, I would say.
Okay.
Which isn't, and it's not a band that's part of the big prog rock legends. They're not that well known as Genesis or Yes or, you know, Pink Floyd, all bands I love, but Gentle Giant just had, something about them that you couldn't find anywhere, because they were all, I think every one of them was a multi-instrumentalist.
Oh,
and
okay.
They played a lot of different stuff, like they had a Baroque influence to their music, so it was all over the place again in a good way. But I really cannot find another prog band like them. Like the quality of the recordings was like incredible for the time. You can just listen to them and someone from the same years, and you'll notice that their recordings were much, much, much cleaner.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, they were super and into everything music, actually, that it was like tiny, tiny details I won't even go into, because like it gets too technical. I don't think it would be useful now.
I mean, maybe we'll do a prog rock technical episode and dive into the nitty gritty. But until then.
Yeah, until then. But I just love everything about them. And they lasted like 10 years, like in the 80s, they were no more. So they didn't even, you know, they were too much even for the 70s. Like, and that's saying a lot. But yeah, I love those guys and Kansas too. I already mentioned Yes, Genesis, Emerson, Lake and Palmer.
Yep.
You know, all the big names.
Are there any?
Frank Zappa, of course.
Are there any like Italian artists? Just because, like, you know, we don't as pop culture here in North America, in the U.S. specifically, we don't really hear a lot from outside of the U.S. because we're too self-absorbed or whatnot. But is there any like Italian artists, whether it's prog rock or otherwise, that you like really enjoy? Like, we should shout it out, because like, you know,
yeah,
maybe there's some new ones my listeners can find.
Like with prog rock, there's actually a little group of it kind of got its own like style, because it's, if you search around, you're gonna if you look for Italian prog rock, it's kind of its own little sub-genre. And I really like Italian prog bands like Banco del Mutuo Soccorso. It's difficult to, you know, to actually spell it.
You know
for
what?
You.
If after we're done recording, type it up for me, I'll include it in the show notes, because I wouldn't be able to feign a guess at
it. Yeah, yeah. Then there's PFM. They're the most well known, so it's the biggest prog band from Italy.
Okay.
And then, you know, some smaller bands, But I'll give you like a good good list maybe later, so you can link
I'll put
it
in the show notes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, are there any other musical influences that have like affected your like how or how you compose or how you arrange your covers of the game songs? Like you mentioned prog rock, but are there any other genres or artists even? Like you, like we were talking off mic about how you don't like how you feel like genres pigeonhole, or there's a lot of gatekeeping, like you can't do this because you're part of this genre or whatever. Yeah. So let's not do that. Let's not gatekeep. Like outside of whether it's prog rock or otherwise, what other artists or musicians have kind of influenced, or other game music, even like the composers for game music, which ones out there have influenced your personal style?
And that's a lot of them.
Well, how about this? List like five. Doesn't have to be top five, because I understand that involves ranking. Yeah. That's a lot of like that's a lot of math that you have to do on the fly when I didn't give you any prep beforehand. So just the five off the top of your head.
All right. So I want to say Earth, Wind, and Fire for funk.
Yo, okay.
I want to say John Scofield for jazz.
Okay.
Or for jazz guitar specifically. It's one of my favorite guitarists with Pat Metheny. I want to say Frank Zappa for general 70s and weird, you know, experimental rock. What else do I have? An Italian artist that you probably know is Giorgio Moroder.
Yes, because he like Daft Punk really made him a lot more prominent in US. Obviously, he was bigger way before then, but like because once again, US we're a little behind on a lot of the pop culture from Europe.
He's kind of the father of Italo disco or stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And that's how I like if you remember the Daft Punk song, it starts with a click, like a metronome click. And that is the basis on which Giorgio actually made his style, because like he did like the kick drum on every beat, you know, it's, you know, your usual kick drum on every beat for disco, for electronic disco. He made it with a metronome going into an amplifier, I think, or something like that. Oh. So that's a metronome. Yeah. So that's not like an actual kick drum. It's like a metronome. Going into something, you know, some effect chain or whatever.
That's really cool.
But yeah, for more experimental things, I like Brian Eno, like ambient stuff like that. You know, there's a lot of things. Yeah. I'm actually starting to listen to some hip hop. Okay. Know? And I have this weird realization, like last year. I never actually got interested in you know, hip hop or anything like that, just because like when I grew up and when I was like, I'd never been like a big metalhead, but you know, when you start playing guitar, you're gonna get into metal rock bands or metal bands, and you're gonna get into this those stupid arguments about what's real music, good music.
Yeah.
Hip hop is never good music for teenagers to play an instrument, because hip hop is has no instruments and it's all like electronic and sample based. It's
and that's not always the case, but
bullshit
yeah.
things. But like I had this realization, like why shouldn't I like hip hop? It's like it's funk basically. It's just funk samples and guys who can do very cool vocal things like rhymes and rhythm. It's like there's no reason why I should like it, and I like it.
Yeah, I mean it's always good to broaden your horizons. Man, I have to get you hooked up with my buddy Rick over at Pixel Project Radio, because you and him, I think, could just talk. Like Rick is also went to school for music, and a lot of his podcast he does full on music episodes periodically. He's also very big into jazz. That's one of his personal favorite genres, right, as it were. I really think you and him would hit it off really well. He's much more knowledgeable about music than I am. Like, so if you list like jazz guitarists or musicians or, you know, drummers, horn players, whatever, flutists, any of that stuff. He will be the guy who will probably know it, at least.
Great.
So
yeah.
I'll have to get you two hooked up with each other. So
definitely. Yeah.
For your YouTube channel now.
Yes.
So we talked about how, you know, like where your influences come from. But now I want to know, when you're applying it to the YouTube channel, there's a couple questions I have. Like, one, how do you approach coming up with your arrangements? So when you do, you pick a song first, or maybe you pick like, I really want to do a cover in this style, and then maybe find a song that fits it? Or is it more personal? Do you find something that you're going through a personal journey of picking out some of your favorite tracks?
It's a little bit of everything. Like, it's not always the same. It's not always the same reason. One technical thing that I have to follow no matter what is licensing. Like, I have to find something that can be licensed to be published on Spotify and stuff like that. Like, YouTube doesn't have such, it's more like a gray area. YouTube is like, you can upload whatever, but then, you know, God knows what will happen to your stuff if you, you know, if just the algorithm picks it up and all the copyright things. But with covers on Spotify and, you know, all those streaming services, which is where I have, you know, actual more numbers, there's actually a distributor who licenses your covers. It's, so everything is legal, you know, the actual copyright holders get their share, and, you know, you can have it up. You know, as long as it's been released as a soundtrack, as a, like an actual physical release or a digital one.
Okay.
So not, especially with older games, sometimes you will not find an actual release for a track. So I think I wanted to make an F-Zero track some months ago, and it wasn't licensable at all. So I had to give it up. Like, that's the you know, the issue with this. Speaking more artistic terms, it's like I mainly choose from my personal taste or mood I'm in that particular moment. Sometimes it's very natural. Like, I happen to listen to one track and, like, I already imagined how I would make a cover of it. So it's, those are the easier times, you know.
Yeah.
It's when you already have it in your head, then you just have to do it. Some other times is I pick it just because it's a little bit out of my comfort zone, and then, you know, let's see what happens. But, you know, it's always like I have to like it first.
Yeah.
And the prompts can be, you know, basically any. It's like with a Pokemon, I mentioned this one. I have a Pokemon cover, like it's Route 209, I think, which is, I think, a very nice melody and everything. But if you go to listen to it, it has like a fast part at the end of the track, then it loops back. And it bothered me because it was too short. So I was listening to it, and I was like, yeah, this part is cool. Like, let's see where it goes. And then it goes nowhere, and the loop starts back. And that irked me. So I want, you know, I made the cover just because I didn't like how they did it.
And so did you.
Or I liked it a lot, but I didn't like how they ended it.
I gotcha.
So, you know.
Did you then kind of complete that section at the end? Like, you did your own interpretation of where it would have gone?
Yeah, I actually ended up like adding a good minute and a half of just my stuff, you know, not even like covers, like, you know, composition at the points, not even arrangement anymore. But yeah.
That's super interesting. What's some of the most challenging aspects of arranging your covers? Like, is it the song, it's, or is it like the instrumentation, like the instruments that you choose? Is it trying to figure out maybe like what, like how to fit a, because you use, like you said, guitar is like your primary instrument. Do you, is it hard to find a way to use guitar in every song, or is it like, what are some of the challenges you face when you're arranging these tracks?
All right. So it depends on every track, of course, but like with older music, with older like chiptune and stuff like that, the problem often is it's very short. Like the loop is very short. Yep. It's like 20 seconds or 30 or, you know, 1 minute at best. So I have to actually come up with new things. Like it's going to be a compositional thing. And the more I did, I went heavier on the original parts. Back then when I started, I just covered the main loop, like the main track. And then maybe I looped a couple times. I didn't put too much, you know, thought into it. But now I kind of think about them like an actual finished track. So it has to have its flow. It has to hit some points, like some, there has to be a climax that has to be hit at some point, and there has to be a like satisfying ending to it. So I think a lot more about the arrangement and the like the overall flow of the song. So it can be hard to make new material that it sounds, I don't want to say I want to just use good, but it sounds like it belongs to the track, right?
Yeah, it's in the same style as the track, the same kind of like overall vibe and feel of it. I get you.
Yes. Some of the time I just, you know, let myself, you know, let my ear guide me. And some of the most fun ones I did were just because I felt like, you know, it was pretty cool like that. And I just went with it, you know. I was listening just yesterday to another podcast where the host was talking about like how they thought creative people approach their craft, and they thought that, you know, every musician, every artist had already figured everything out before starting, before even, you know, putting a note up or, you know, drawing a line. But it's never like that. It's like you have the gist of it at the start, and then you just, you know, just improvise.
Yeah. I think that's a super, I know it's like kind of tangential to what our conversation's about, but I think that's something that not a lot of people know. I'm not putting myself necessarily as a creative. I guess I technically am because I do the podcast, but I don't know. Yeah. I always feel weird calling myself that because what I do is converse. It's not really like I'm putting out, you know, like music or art or like paintings or drawings or like making film or video or stuff like that. But I do think that there is a creative element, at least even for my own stuff, of just picking episode topics, ideas to like engage with people, stuff like that. And I think that some people forget that it's a lot of it's just trial and error. Like you're just guessing 90% of the time. Like you do something and then it doesn't work and you're like, all right, then I'll learn for next time. Like I've released episodes, I won't name any of them, but I've released episodes where I tried something different in either how I approach an interview or maybe how I approach conversing about a game, or maybe even just like it was a weird idea for an episode that I've never tried before, and I'll go back and listen to it now and I'll be like, oh man, I could have done that better. But like at the time, you're just trying to, like, you won't know until you do it.
Yeah, you don't know at all. Like I totally share the sentiment with, I have a lot of old covers that I don't even like anymore, but you know, they were part of the process. Like they were part of, you know, the channel and everything, and that's, you know, for sure, but they were part of my learning, you know. So they were proof that, you know, I was at that point back then, and now I'm another point. Like
it's a cool way to show the progress that you've gone through as a musician. Like you're it shows what you had, where you started and what you've learned, and then how you've progressed with that. I actually kind of like also leaving it on there because what I'm going to be doing at some point for the show is I'm going to be redoing a bunch of episodes for specific reason, I'm going to turn it into a series, but they're all episodes that I did a long time ago. Cause actually I was looking at your channel, by the way, dude. We started our kind of respective, like, online personas around the same time. My podcast started in June of 2024, and your first upload was June of 2014, and yours was July of 2014. Yeah, July. I mean, actually, Jesus mine Christ, might have like been 10 July. Years. Yeah, it's been 10 years. I think it's kind of funny, and it's coming up on the 10-year anniversary of my podcast. At the time we're recording this, and probably after this episode comes out, I still don't know what I'm going to do for that. But it's the 10-year anniversary of my show, and it's just funny because I was looking at your channel like, oh my God, we really started around the same time. And just now we're finally connected.
Yeah, that's very curious. Like, but yeah, it's fun. That's a fun coincidence. I like it.
What are some of your favorite covers that you have done? And what are ones that, I know this might sound weird, but like, what's one that you released that you would like to do, like you wish you could have another pass at? And what's one that you're like really proud of currently?
Oh, there are a lot I would do again. I'm probably, you know, to follow on your thought about remaking some stuff, I probably will start remaking like the oldest ones, just because I would do them in a very, very different way now.
Okay.
And so, you know, everything from back then when I did like the Big Blue stuff, the Dragon Roost Island. Let me open my Spotify because it's like I have a lot of, I open YouTube, which is better, I think. But I'm pretty proud of my latest ones because I do put a lot of effort into them, like more effort than I used to.
Your video production is great, by the way.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. The video production aspect was also very frustrating for me to figure out.
I believe it.
You know, maybe we'll talk about it later, but I want to say, you know, I might be too much, but, you know, anything under a certain threshold, like a certain year, then I don't like anymore. But
I feel you on that, like, not with your show, but like for myself, like anything I want to say like pre-2019, I'm like, I could have done better on a lot of those.
We also am like that. I think 2019 or something down the line. But you know, the oldest one I'm very proud about still is my Stick Brush Symphony.
Oh, okay. From Donkey Kong.
But the Brawl version, though. Not Donkey Kong. Because the Donkey Kong one I did like as one of my first. And I did this one like 5 years ago. And I'm still pretty proud of it. And among the latest ones, I really like my Technopathetic from Jet Set Radio Future cover, because it was a very, very weird cover to do, because it's super sample-based, which I'm not great at. I'm new to that kind of processing and, you know, mindset to making music. So it was very, very trial and error. Mm-hmm. But I think it's, you know, it stands out from my other covers. And I think the result is very, very cool. And but basically, you know, the reason why I take like a month to release one cover is because I do put a lot of effort and time into the arrangement. So
yeah,
this at least allows me to be pretty satisfied with the result, with basically everything I put out nowadays. So that's a good thing. You know, even in terms of psychological,
mental health.
Health. It's like, I did something that I'm proud of. So
good. I getcha. Do you ever feel like when you, as a creative, you know, do you ever feel like when maybe like the month long release schedule work, or like a month, one release a month, it works. But do you ever feel like you can't appreciate all the spoils of your work, as it were, because you're like, once you release something, you're like, all right, I got to move on to the next thing. And because the stuff you do, it takes a long time. Like, just to like, even take away the composition, like take away the amount of time you spend working on the composition just for that. Just the video production alone, with all the different camera angles that you use and how often you have to like switch and cut things over. Like, you, like, I would assume you have to, like, depending on how many instruments you use, you almost have to film it. Like, if you have four instruments, I'm assuming you're filming it at least four different times all the way through.
Yeah. It's like you have to, of course I don't have like four cameras to do the actual multicam. So it's like every camera angle is me recording another take for it. And I, like, returning to your question from before, it's like, I do struggle sometimes with, I have to put guitar in it, even though I wouldn't really put it. And I struggled for a long time with it. I'm kind of letting it go now. Like, sometimes I do like make parts without guitar, and it's all right. I will just have to kind of, you know, get a little better at piano. Now I'm starting to film piano too. But sometimes, like, I cannot play what's being played. Like, and the next cover will be like a, you know, a big example of that, because there are things that I cannot play, and not even from a technical standpoint. It's just because it's composition. It's not guitar or keys or anything.
Yeah.
So what do I show on video? Like, what do I do? So that's the problem I had with video production, that I didn't have before, because I used to just put the games, you know, on screen and, you know, call it a day like that. But I, at one point, I didn't like it anymore. So, you know, the result is better now, but, you know, it takes more time. Again, it takes more time. And it takes more time to figure out something to fill these parts without a guitar. So, yeah, the more, you know, the better you wanna be your final, you want your final product to be, the more time you're going to be messing around and trying to find the right way to do it.
Yeah, I can only imagine. That's actually one of the reasons I've never gone into video production for my own podcast. Like, I know people like that if I want to get more viewers or more listeners, as it were, on it, like, video production is a great way to do it and throw it up on YouTube. But I don't have like the time for it. Also, like, there's a lot of episodes. I mean, a little, you know, stuff that's not going to make it into the final cut of this episode. The intro that I recorded for this, you know, that you all heard about me introducing Carmine here, I flubbed that like easily for the first like 2 minutes. None of that's going to make it in. So if I were to do a video version of it, there's going to be some jump cuts. And I feel I don't like having jump cuts on like a video podcast, because unless I had like multiple cameras and you could like quick do a cut. So like you cut to a second camera, and then that way, I mean, that might be the way I do it though. Maybe if I ever do video production and I have like the video from Zoom or from Discord or whatever, I could then, like, if there's a jump cut, I would literally just jump to them reacting to what I'm saying next or something along those lines. I could mask those transitions a little bit. But even then though, I don't have the time to do it. Like, I trying to find time alone for playing games and doing all that other stuff. I had the 2023. I did a retrospective for the end of 2023 just a few weeks ago. That was my time to vent about all this bullshit. I'm going to keep it directed towards you for the time being. Let me ask you about game soundtracks now. We've been kind of talking a lot about your influences, but what are just some of your favorite game soundtracks? What are some soundtracks just really have resonated with you that you still find yourself going back to and enjoying to listen?
All right, so there's a whole bunch, but I already mentioned like Metroid Prime, but I wanna say, top of my head, I still listen to it to this day, is the Xenoblade Chronicles X.
Okay.
or Cross or whatever, I don't know.
Yeah.
But the only one we don't have on the Switch as of now. Mm-hmm. It really hit me like hard. I don't know why. I think it's because the composer actually like managed to keep the soundtrack listenable. Like you can listen to it like a song, like it's a series of songs. It's like an album. It's not like something that you would need the game for it to work. It just works by itself as a piece of music. So that's what I really like about it.
I gotcha.
And it's also like a mix of orchestral and electronic instruments, and you know, it's a lot of little things that, you know, it's, I think it's more than the sum of its parts.
I gotcha.
That's how I would describe it. Other than that, I would say the Mario Kart 8 soundtrack is fantastic.
Really good.
It's, you know, I don't like to say like this is best, like this is the best, or this is better than another thing, but I think Nintendo really did an amazing job with the Mario Kart 8 soundtrack, and still listen to it to this day. I actually, I brought one of the pieces from Mario Kart 8 to my composition teacher one time. And we actually like analyzed it a little bit, and it was cool because, you know, he was one of my, he's my favorite teacher that I had, because he was among the very few in the school that actually was open to everything. That was a very, very major influence in how I do approach music and how I do think about music. So it was pretty cool.
What did he think about it?
He thought it was very cool. I don't remember the track name, but I think it was Shy Guy. No. There's like a track in where you go like into a something with woods, like in a forest thing, and there's like a oboe and flutes and, you know, clarinets, so all that very, very cool harmony. But yeah, it's, I think Nintendo, like with the Wii U generation, they nailed music. I think they totally nailed it. Like,
it might have been called Wild Woods.
Wild Woods, yes.
I was just kind of searching for it. Sorry, you were saying with the Wii U generation, what were you talking about with that?
I think Nintendo really nailed the music aspect with the Wii U gen. Like, you know, that generation was what it was, but with music, they found their, you know, identity, I think. With all those things.
The Wii U, I feel like, is just, it's always going to be one of those chronically underrated systems for a while, just because the bad naming scheme and just all a bunch of other things. It was, I miss that era, the 3DS and Wii U, just because, even though it was like only a decade ago, 3DS and Wii U just shut down like a year ago, like their online shops. But I miss it because I miss having like, what is it, like menu themes and,
like that's a big one.
There's
yes.
character. You ever heard of the music label Game Chops?
Yeah, I do have them in mind, that I know who they are. Yes.
Yeah. So they did, it was years ago, the founder of it, DJ Cutman. It was right after the Wii U came out. He did a full remix album of just the Wii menu music, menu music. I think it's called like Wii U Grooves or something like that. It's really good. It's a really good, remix album of all that stuff. I love Game Chops is awesome. They're actually local to near where I'm at too, which is kind of
crazy. Oh, that's
crazy.
Cool.
Yeah. Like I live in the Philadelphia area, and they're from Philly. So it's kind of cool that they're like kind of right near me. Anyway.
That's an idea for, you know, when you decide to do a in-person podcast with video and everything.
I mean, I would need a studio. I would need to actually like, wish I had the money and the time to devote to it. If I had the money, in all honesty, what I would probably do is, whether it was in a studio or not, I'd probably hire a video editor, but I don't have the money for that. Like, it's just, I don't have the money to, for someone to take care of that. Cause I do all of my, own editing, scheduling, record, like everything is produced solo.
On me.
So there's no way there's no way I have time for the video part. So I think that's all I had in terms of specific to the YouTube channel. But is there anything about your YouTube channel that you would like about music in general? It doesn't even have to be specific to your channel you just wish more people would ask about or know about. Like, I always feel like, you know, I'm not a musician, so I'm coming at it from a very specific perspective. But maybe from your perspective, what's something that, like, you wish more people knew about in terms of music composition and arrangements?
It's a broad question. I would say I wish more people, just the way they think about music, wasn't so dismissive. I use this word, I'm not sure if it's the best word to use, but we kind of have this thing where we, you know, we think about music like it's something that it's there, you know, it's you give it for granted, and it's really not. Like, sometimes, especially like in projects like games or movies or anything like that, it can make or break something, and you don't even, like, the average person doesn't really think too hard about that. And, you know, I would really like people to kind of understand how much work there's, you know, under or behind a piece of music, and, you know, don't take it for granted. Don't take it for granted that you can go on Spotify and have everything at your, you know, fingertips to listen to, because it's months of work from musicians. And yeah, you know, I don't want to get into discussion about, you know, streaming royalties and, you know,
I know that's a, that is a, it's a, yeah. Yeah, I believe it. It's from everything that I've heard from other music artists, like, it's like the love, it's a love-hate relationship with Spotify, because you don't get the money you deserve, but you get the notoriety, like, you get a lot more reach,
or at least you get the chance at it, like, you get the, you know, the shot at, maybe someone will put me in a big playlist, and maybe I'll get, you know, followers and you know, streams.
That's gotta be such a tough thing to balance. I can't, like, I don't envy that. I mean, there's always, unfortunately with everything, there's always nasty sides to the business of it, you know, with whether it's music, whether, and now also with all the advent of AI garbage, all the AI music. Illustrations. I use the term illustrations in quotations, or, you know, illustrations. I'm not going to get on my pedestal. I have a very strong opinion about AI art.
You're not the only one.
Oh, I believe, especially for people who spent years of their life practicing something. And that kind of actually ties into something we were talking about off mic. Just maybe, I don't know if this is not to answer for you, but besides what you were mentioning, how, like, you wish people realize how important music was and not to take it for granted, which I agree with you. Music, like, 9 times out of 10, like, you, the soundtrack dictates the emotion the audience is feeling in a movie. And even, like, outside of it, if it's just music that's not tied with some other form of media, just people listen to music for whatever mood they are currently in. But just talking about the gatekeeping with different genres of music,
you know?
Like, that's something you were talking a lot about it to me off mic about it, just like, the, you know, that can't be this, that's not jazz because it doesn't adhere to this this standard. And I don't know enough about it, but I'm fascinated by that. Do you want to elaborate at all? We don't have to talk about just games. This is what I like about this. It's an informal interview. We just kind of shoot the shit and see where it goes.
And that's very, very cool you know, aspect of podcasts.
I love it.
But yeah, to kind of get back to the discussion, it was like, I would say everything started with how music is taught in music school and colleges. And I had 2 degrees. I have one in jazz guitar and one in jazz composition. Mm-hmm. And the way they approached like music teaching, at least, you know, where I went, but it's, you know, I think it's very common, is a very conservative kind of way. So, you know, this genre, which in my case is jazz, should be played like this. So if you play it this way, like this specific way, you are a good student and a good musician. If you don't, then you are not. And this, you know, shapes years of your life as a student, because it's like you spend like 5 years or more, like in my case, because I have 2 degrees, and like where everything about yourself worth as a musician, you know, gravitates around your grades and how teachers, you know, interact with you and everything, you know, about that. So I think it has a lot to do with how I perceive music now, because I now don't want any borders, and I don't want to even say if something is good or not, because one thing that I started to dislike is music or art discussion in general, where, you know, it ends up with, you know, things like X thing is good, Y thing is bad. I don't really like this way of approaching art. It's like, it might not be for you, or might not be what the artist intended. And, you know, we get in more abstract territory here, but my own interpretation of how I see art and everything is like, even errors are, you know, up to question. Like,
yeah, if something doesn't sound human, if it's too perfect, it doesn't sound human almost.
Yeah.
And sometimes an error, like, what is it? You see it with like vocal coaches. They do like the vocal coach react stuff on like YouTube and whatnot.
Oh yeah.
Well, they'll react to something and they'll say like, that technically, they'll say like, oh, technically they didn't hit that note right, but it sounds better that they didn't, because it adds this level of emotion to it that you would have not heard otherwise.
Like,
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's more like, I think you can consider an error, something that the musician or the artist didn't intend to do. But if I'm playing a weird note that sounds weird to you, maybe it doesn't to me, maybe it does to me, but if I want to play that note, like, who says that's an error that should be done? Like, right?
Exactly.
So if I didn't want to do it, then yeah, I want to do something else, right? But if I'm perfectly, you know, conscious that, you know, I wanted to hit that note and that weird dissonant, you know, whatever note, then, you know, good for me. I want to do that. I did it.
Yeah.
I think this actually liberated me a lot. Like, once I hit this level of consciousness about music and how I like to think about it, it liberated from all the things that I all of the baggage from music school. And of course I'm super thankful to, you know, music school, because I know all my things because of that, but
like,
just the way they approach it that I don't like.
And like we were saying off mic, you know, you have to learn what the shape of the box is so you can learn how to color outside of it, type of thing, or draw outside of the box, type of thing. But when the school that you're going to doesn't allow that freedom to, like, hey, you know what the box is already, and it doesn't allow you to kind of like step outside of it, I could see how that would be super frustrating, when it's like, you know, I know this stuff. you know, I know what I'm doing. Just let me experiment type of thing.
Yeah. It's a complex, these courses thing, because like from one point of view, I understand part of it because it's like, you are a jazz school and you have to put out jazz musicians, right? Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, if you let a student graduate that doesn't know how to play, at least, you know, there are certain things.
Like a standard, like they don't know how to play a certain standard.
There are ways to define, you know, genres. So with jazz, it's a little bit difficult because you have like a whole century to, you know, to pick from.
Yeah.
So if you're playing big band music, then you're going to be around the 30s. If you play bebop, it's going to be the 40s. And then, you know, everything else after that, Miles Davis. And, you know, I don't want to get again too technical, but you have more than a century to pick from. It's like, I am a jazz musician. Yeah, but what do I play? And in my music school, it was, you had to play bebop, like, so that very fast tempos and improvisation and very little time dedicated to arrangements and stuff like that. It's more like quintet things, those trios, you know, small formations. And then that's why also, that's the reason why I went and studied composition later, because I realized I liked the composition aspect more than the performing aspect. But it's a complex discourse again, because it's like the jazz school has to put out jazz musician, the classical school has to put out classical musicians. But also I'm not a product. I am a person that wants to express themselves. Right.
Yeah.
So I think it's more important to have everything clear, like in terms of knowledge, and then I can just use whatever I want to create whatever I want, instead of creating something that's already there and just adhere to some standards, if that makes any sense. But that's the way I do approach music. So that's also why I do make a lot of different genres with my covers, just because I feel like I don't want to limit myself to just one or few genres, right?
Yeah. No, that makes sense. That makes sense. All right. Well, we are starting to run out of time on this episode, so I have a few more questions for you to wrap up before we do our final shout outs and whatnot. So first, I'm going to, as I do with all my interviews now, I am a huge fan of the Alan Alda podcast, Clear and Vivid, which is all about communication and whatnot, and he always asks his guests a handful of questions to end the episodes. I'm not going to ask all of his questions. There's like seven of them, and we don't have time for all that. But
okay,
I'm going to pick one of them, and I usually alternate between two, just because I like these two the most. The others are a little bit too, you know what? No, screw it. So his questions all revolve around communication. So the normal ones that I ask are like, what book changed your life, or what's the other one? It's what do you wish you really understood? Those are both really good questions. But since his is about communication, this has nothing to do with games. This doesn't really have anything to do with anything we've talked about. But I like this question. I keep iterating or repeating that it's all about how we communicate, right? Or that's his podcast. So one of the major parts of communication kind of revolves around this question. How do you tell someone that they got their facts wrong? How do you tell someone that they're wrong about something? What do you do when you have to relay that information to them?
Oh, that's a very specific question.
Yeah, right. I know
that's a good one.
His questions are great. I like that question a lot, and haven't used it at once during the show, so you're the first one to get this one.
Oh man, I'm exclusive for now. But all right, so it depends. All right, so if we're talking about art and music, I try to be as flexible as possible. Like I already talked about how I do do not like Absolute Swiss art, yep, because I don't think art is, you know, is the best subject to deal with this kind of thinking. When it's about, you know, science or scientific stuff that I know my facts on, I try to be as direct as possible. I don't like to taint the message too much. I know some people like to, you know, make the other person feel reassured, and then, you know, it's all right if you, you know, if you got this thing wrong and everything else. But I do value the direct approach instead, just because, you know, the thing is wrong and you should know about it so that your next actions, or, you know, whatever you're going to do next, is going to be with that knowledge. Like, so even, you know, it's, this approach is not the best with, you know, people who get really sensitive about these kind of things.
Yep.
That's a weird thing where, you know, your opinions, if I don't agree with your opinion, I kind of, you know, it's something, it's like an attack to you, towards you. And I don't understand that way of thinking. I understand that there's a lot of people who do that on different levels, but, you know, my way of approaching these kind of things led to, you know, disagreements that, you know, were a little harsh sometimes. But again, I do value the, like, how clear the information is.
The direct approach is a lot less. Yeah. It doesn't beat around the bush, as it were.
I
can relate to that. I as myself, I'm actually a pretty sensitive person, but I've learned to kind of not, I don't have the thickest skin as I should, but the way I kind of handle it, for, cause I'm a supervisor at my job, is like,
okay,
it's to be, I am direct, but what I say, I'll tell them, like, this is the severity of the mess up. Like, if it's small, then I tell them it's a small thing, but make sure you change it, because these do compound. I tell them, if you continue this, then it's a bigger issue. But if it's a one-time thing, okay, no big deal. If it's a big thing, I flat out tell them, like, this is a big issue. We need to see this fixed. Like, and sometimes it's even clear, this is no indictment on you as a person. It's just, this is a mistake.
Yeah.
Mistakes happen.
Exactly. But, so it's not like an aggression. That's sometimes the misunderstanding is, I'm not attacking you, right?
Mm-hmm. And it depends on how you relay that. Like, so if we have a disagreement on an opinion, right? And you say, I'm not sure if I agree with that. You know, I think this, this, and this. If I took that personally, that's more on me. Now, if I state my opinion and someone goes, that's stupid, then I'm like, that feels more like an attack as opposed to just a difference of opinion. Like, you can still think that opinion is stupid, but the way you relay it, you can just say, oh, no, I disagree with this, this, and this. And if they push the button, that's a different story. Then they're being aggressive over it. But all right. So we got to move on to our final question. This last question is questions from Courtney. It's a section of the show. Courtney is my wife. She famously, to my listeners, knows nothing about my guests, nothing about gaming and nerd culture, anime, whatever, what have you. She doesn't know any of that. So I always ask her for questions to ask my guest. So here she offered two, and one I already kind of know the answer to. It was coffee or tea. You were drinking coffee.
I'm super big on coffee.
But here's the one I want to ask, though. I think it's a little bit more interesting. If you could go away for a week's vacation in a book, which book would it be?
Oh, man, that's
a good one.
Difficult one. Yeah. Good one.
Man, where would I go?
All right, so, like, I have a lot of astronomy books because it's something I really, really like.
Mm-hmm.
But does it, you know, doesn't really work?
You could go on a vacation in the stars. Let's just assume it's magic, you know, at that point.
You
can breathe in space, sure.
Then, I'd definitely go see some, at least, you know, the planets from our system. But yeah, other than that, I don't know. Gonna say the common thing and say the Shire from Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings. I gotcha. Yeah. Where would mine be?
Sounds like a pretty chill place to be.
Well, I mean, there is that one point in Lord of the Rings where it gets burned, like burned to the ground.
Yeah, in the book, yes. before that.
For me, the first thing in my mind was Narnia, but that's just because it was brought up in conversation over the last week. I don't know where mine would be, in all honesty, but yeah, so that's it. That's all the questions I got for you, man. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for
wrap this all up, where can the good people find you online? And of course, is there anything you'd like to promote at the day this episode comes out, so you know if what is and what's not coming out? It'll be out on the 24th on Patreon, but everyone on the free feed is going to be getting it on the 28th. So the January 28th is when this is coming out.
All right. So everyone can find me at Game and Sound on YouTube and Spotify and everything, you know, every streaming service. So you just write down Game and Sound either with the, you know, commercial E or just and spelled.
Mm-hmm.
You can find me on also pretty much any social. I don't use Facebook anymore.
Don't blame me.
You're gonna find me on Instagram, Twitter. I'm also on Threads because it became available here in Europe, like I think in last month or something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't use it much, but you can find me there too. And in terms of promotion, I will be releasing a, now it's in the future, but it's going to be in the past for listeners, a new cover on the 26th of January. And it's going to be a cover of Driftvale City from Pokemon Black and White. It's going to be very, very interesting in terms of genre. There are at least three different genres in there.
Oh wow! Okay.
So, it's a pretty good one to start the year, and it's gonna have also a little message about, you know, everything we talked about today about the, you know, genres and gatekeeping, and you know, and every music is valid and should exist, right?
I like it. I like it. So yes, everyone go check out Carmine's channel, Game and Sound. It's fantastic. For those who listened to my Secret of Monkey Island episode, the song that I had at the as the outro for it was his arrangement of that theme. So go check it out. As for myself, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky, at Still Loading Pod over there. Also Twitch at Still Loading Pod. I stream every usually Saturdays and Tuesdays, assuming I don't have a podcast recording session, but I stream over there on those days. You can also support the show in a number of ways. You can give it a 5-star rating review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whichever podcasting app you use, because it helps more people find the show and it makes me feel warm and fuzzy. And I like feeling warm and fuzzy. You can also support the show by going over to patreon.com/stillloadingpod. For $1 a month, you'll get all the episodes earlier with better audio quality, as well as access to patron voting rights, which this year there's been bonus. There's been a lot of extra voting going on. I do quarterly polls every 3 months, but I started it this year. There is backlog month, where at the beginning of January, the poll has since ended, but the beginning of January I put 16 games up and people could vote for as many as they wanted, and the top four are going to be covered by me on the podcast either in November or October, depending on what the show's schedule kind of lines up to be. But that will dictate my block of games for that month. So Patreon, like, that's all at the $1 level. You get all those the voting rights, the
early access things.
And also patron there's a patron like exclusive level on my Discord, but that's a little bit more I always forget to shout that out. That's at the $1 level. For $4, you'll get everything at the $1 level, plus two mini episodes every month, which run about 15 to 20 minutes each. They're all a variety of different topics. They're mini reviews for games I'm playing. They are Like sometimes I do music episodes where I pick a selection of different music, like SNES selections or Genesis jams, and I just kind of pick different music from those different systems. And that's all at the $4 level. At the $5 level, you'll get everything I mentioned prior, plus access to Still Bonding, which is my monthly James Bond podcast where me and a bunch of friends bond over 007. The time this episode comes out, GoldenEye will be the most recent episode, and Tomorrow Never Dies will be next month. So, yeah, that's everything over at patreon.com/stillloadingpod. So if you like all my stuff, you want to help support me and continue to help me grow the show, I'd be super appreciative of it. And yeah, so I think that's it. Yeah, patreon.com/chillingpod. That's all I got for you today, listeners. Thank you all so much for joining me. Carmine, thank you once again for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're very welcome, and I hope to have you on again. We can talk about a game or something. But yeah, that's it. That's all the time I got. Thank you all for listening, and I will see you all next time.
Still listening, gentlemen? That last few minutes might have been a little confusing. Oh, yeah.
Now, don't tell me you're taking all this seriously.
Remember that all sound is vibration.